apologies, accept apologies. Secretary, are there any apologies?
Good morning, everybody. Yes, Chairperson, there's apology from the Minister and the DG and Deputy Minister Kadiming. They all have prior commitments, and there's apology from Deputy Minister Bapela that has a family responsibility. And then from the side of the department, Dr. Tao, the head of the Disaster Management Center, will be leading the delegation from the department. Thank you. Sorry, Chairperson. Also, Honorable Buthelezi, she has had an operation and will only be back to work on the 25th of March. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, any further apologies that might not have been communicated with the Secretary? As already indicated, the agenda item is one. Can I get a proposal for adoption of that or anything that you would want to amend that item? Yes.
For the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. That moves us to the actual item. That is why I was saying this deliberations informed by all that was happening since 26 May 2021, guided by the hands of the honorable members. I see Honorable Cesar, number one. Honorable Brink, number two. For now, it looks like those are the two hands. Can I allow you, Honorable President, to start the deliberations?
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. We thank you very much for the opportunity to deliberate on these matters. They are a plethora of issues across board, and a number of legislations that then inform what is available and what is not available. And firstly, the EFF would reject the amendments today based on the following. We do not find their argument convincing in that there is a lot of mimicry of the existing legislation, thus find the argument unresearched and unprepared and ill-prepared. The fact that some whites-only stakeholders came last year to the committee with whites-only representation, came to the committee to count their losses without acknowledgement that COVID-19 regulations and COVID-19 national state of disaster did not only affect them, but across all sections and across all society, the poor and the fact that they came to masquerade as concerned about unemployment, whereas we had asked them about transformation without a proper response provided to the committee leaves a lot to be desired. That the amendment bill initially...
Recording in progress.
Sorry about that, Jay. Sorry, I don't know where that comes from. It often does that on my side. That the amendment bill initially did not receive traction in the public. It took the committee resolution to open the bill up for public comments in the first place. which was open from the 19th July to 26th August 2021 for a period of 3 weeks. And there were some submissions that were received from different stakeholders, which ended last week. Again, Chair, falling very, very, very short of actually tracking as to what are the root causes of these amendments, because you propose that you are within 21 days. And in terms of the considerations of the effectiveness of communication of necessary information to departments, province, districts, local municipalities, sector departments, affected departments, affected communities. We didn't find any supporting much in the backup in terms of the details of how would they achieve this within 21 days as proposed. So thus, the 21 days is quite questionable from our side. Proposal of national state of, and then should be in a position. And then, Chair, there is a question of the public institution having to strengthen accountability. Indeed, we are in support of accountability, Chair. But in terms of the National Disaster Management Act, Section 8, Section 9 and Section 10 of the Act, which then asserts that which doesn't clarify as to whether the actual disaster management center does have to hold, can hold some of the officials to account in the lack of a response in terms of the damages caused by the national disaster. The agility, efficiency, effectiveness of the management within 21 days is quite questionable. How would they be managing in such a short period of time? I repeat that, Chair. To propose that the national, provincial, and local state of disaster may only be effective in no more than 21 days is a federalist for us, federalist approach of power-mongering tactics to self-seeking containment and retainment of all that is temporarily yours, all that is temporarily in your hands, and reactionary manipulation to justify unnecessary mimics rather than bringing about a solution and a detailed plan into the community as to this is how we are going to achieve this. I really fail to understand how then we'll accept this as amendments as or we support the amendments. And the other issue, Chair, then relates to the 60% support of votes that should be done in terms of resolution adopted in terms of the extensions of the disaster. We view it as something that will affect, perpetuate ransom on disasters and urgent decisions that should be taken on damages caused by the disaster. Because for us, anything that affects the public or anything that is not supported by the public is as a vanguard of the communities we would support. Anything else that is supported by white monopoly capital that does not seem to transform and come to committees with that presentation of that prowess of white supremacy, we don't support. It's as simple as that, and the committee must always know that will not happen. under our watch. And then, Chair, then there's a proposal pertaining to transparency and all those things. And I think that if I may, I will, on the Disaster Management Act, number 57 of 2002, that book, I might not know how to read it yet, but it says research 3.32, disaster risk management initiatives must be preceded by transparent research and careful planning and must provide evidence of the relevant and likely effectiveness of the planned interventions. Now, yeah, the last time I'd asked Dr. Dao of the Disaster Management Center I asked the minister, not Dr. Dao, on empirical evidence and scientific facts on some of the decisions that were taken. And Chair, we stand by that. You see that stands. That such things, Chair, within whether it's the Presidential Coordinating Committee, National Disaster Management Center, National Command Council, MINMEC, all of them, that they must lobby each other on decisions related to unleashing violence on any kind of violence. There are alternative. We watch the news all the time, Chair. There are alternative means to deal with the community, to enforce the law without violence. And violence, as Frantz Fanon says, is dangerous because it only chooses the side of those who are the wretched of the earth, so to speak, all the time. It's the people in the rural areas, and then it's the people in your townships that will always experience violence. And we have not seen violence on the other side. That means those who are controlling the means of production, those who are privileged, will not be touched by through violent means. So unleashing violence through these institutions must not find expression at all. And so those that sit in those committees, and those that sit in the national state of disaster arrangement, must lobby each other against this thing. People have a right to exist. People have a right to life as enshrined in the Bill of Rights. And so there are better ways to actually correct the situation rather than perpetuating problems and ending up with people that are dying and so forth. So indeed, Chair, that is our position there. And the fact that some 500 WhatsApp communications were quite ambiguous in terms of whether they support or not. And so any non-support by public is a non-support for the EFF. If that non-support is not manipulated, of course. I think for now, that's my submission, Chair. Thank you very much.
You, Honorable Brink.
Good morning, Chair. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can.
Thanks very much. Chair, I think the first question before us in considering a bill such as this is a motion of desirability. In other words, not the specific provisions that the draft bill puts on the table, but whether considering those provisions at all is merited by circumstances, but also by the input that we have received as a committee. Now, according to the summary of input that was received in writing, as well as orally before the committee, provided very competently by our researcher, and according to my own count, 15 organizations formally gave input into this draft bill, and 5 individuals. My colleague has referred to the 500 WhatsApp messages, and it's also important that we don't just reject what was communicated via those WhatsApp messages, but attempt to extrapolate some kind of a message from them, even if they are not clear as to whether they support or do not support the amendment bill, even if they aren't explicit, I mean. And according to my count, 11 of the 15 organizations that made presentations before us expressed either full or qualified support for the idea of amending the Disaster Management Act for the purpose of introducing stronger procedural constraints to the exercise of power by the national government under the existing legislation. That is 15 organizations, and I, according to my account, 11 of them either express full or qualified support for the objectives outlined in the memorandum of the bill. And this includes quite a wide diversity of organizations. We also received submissions from 5 individuals, some of whom were experts in constitutional law. And on my account, 3 of the 5 individuals who made those submissions expressed qualified support for the objectives outlined in the memorandum of the bill. 3 of the 5 individuals. So that's 11 of the 15 organizations, 3 of the 5 individuals. And then we must take into account, as per the feedback in paragraph 1.4, of the updated summary of submissions on the draft disaster management amendment bill as provided by the researcher committee, 500 submissions were received via WhatsApp. And while not all of them were clear and explicit on whether they support or oppose the bill, many did express criticism of the government's lockdown strategy and its risk-adjusted strategy in regards to lockdown, which I think are less convincing than obviously the explicit submissions, but it is something that the committee must take into account. Chairperson, getting back to the original point, and that is whether an amendment of this nature is desirable. From these submissions and our own discussions, we can debate whether a state of disaster should be 3 months or 21 days. We can debate whether a special majority should be required to extend a national state of disaster, or whether a 50% majority will do. We can debate various other aspects of the bill. But I think that debate follows a conclusion by this committee that, in fact, this legislation is desirable. And I can just refer by way of example to submissions by Professor Thuli Madonsela from the University of Stellenbosch, as well as the Helen Suzman Foundation, who expressed support for the idea of placing greater procedural constraints on the power of the executive under a state of disaster, but who pointed out that they oppose the special majority. So those things we can debate once we have decided on the desirability of the amendment. But one thing that Professor Madonsela and the Helen Suzman Foundation and others do agree with is clearly that there is a need for an amendment to this act, and Professor Madonsela refers specifically in her submission to the lack of a meaningful parliamentary supervision, which is, under the existing legislation, at odds with the United Nations good governance principles. And I think it's a very important takeaway for us, because we are not merely discussing here the COVID-19 pandemic, which we hope is now receding. We are discussing any future invocation of a national state of disaster, under which government power, doesn't matter who's in government, whether it's the ANC in government, the DA in government, the EFF in government, in which government power can be abused without meaningful parliamentary accountability, without meaningful accountability to the public. And that is significant, and that extends, as I've mentioned, beyond the risk of COVID. And then, Chairperson, I think it's important to point to the diversity of the nature of the organizations who have made submissions before us. I think it will be very difficult to conclude, based on what my colleague has said, that we've only heard from white organizations or organizations that individuals that support white supremacy. For instance, I've mentioned Professor Thuli Madonsela, and I don't understand in any conception how she would be associated with white supremacy, but also as diverse as the Association for Charismatic Churches. And that is significant, because we're not just dealing here with a segment of society, a number of small lobbying organizations, churches, traditional leaders, business organizations, even, Chairperson, the submissions of the National Union of Metal Workers said that the extension and lapsing of the period of a state of disaster should be subject to public debate in the National Assembly, provincial legislatures, or municipal council. And they also said that the decision as to the extension should be made after considerations from members of the public have been received. Now that, Chairperson, from the one submission we've received from organized labor, would be in support of the motion of desirability. We can debate the details later, but I think, Chairperson, if we apply our minds objectively to the submissions and to the discussions in the committee on this bill should proceed. It is desirable to amend the current Disaster Management Act, and we must give ourselves and the public the benefit of a proper debate as to how that amendment should look. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Brain. Now I see Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, our Honorable Brink has said a lot, and I want to agree with him on every word that he said. We must remember that this bill is for the Parliament to have, or to hold the executive accountable and do oversight on what they are doing. And currently, as it is in the Disaster Management Act, we cannot do this. Therefore, if we say that this act or this bill is not desirable, we actually are saying that we do not agree with oversight and accountability of the executive. So therefore, Chairperson, I want to support Brink to say that this bill must be desirable, and we will support the desirability of this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson, can I follow up, please?
Yes, you can follow up.
I'm not trying to... We've never said in the EFF that we don't support accountability. That's the first thing. And to patronize us as an organization to say that...
Chairperson, point of order.
We must apply our minds. I'm on the floor.
Chairperson, I wasn't speaking. Chairperson, I wasn't speaking of the AFF. If the shoe fits, he must just put on the shoe, please.
Yeah, you must put the shoe because you brought the amendment bill. We're trying to interrogate the amendment bill.
Honorable Chairperson, when a member says point of order, allow me to listen to the point of order and then rule. Then we proceed from there. Honorable Groenewald, what is the point of order?
Chairperson, I think that we are all members of this committee, and I'm, can I say, can have my view in terms of this bill. If the EFF feels that I was directing any comment to them, they must please put on the shoe if it fits. But Chairperson, I don't see the EFF as important enough to talk to them. I'm talking to the bill. Thank you.
But that's not the point of order. So let's allow him to conclude and then we'll move from there. Honorable Chairperson.
Let me clarify something, Chair. There is no Honorable Chairperson or a member of the Committee on Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs without the organization. I'm deployed by the organization in this. And I carry out, first and foremost, the propositions by the organization that so are everyone in this committee. So let's not behave as friends to manipulate each other towards an ideal that does not hold, please. And I was saying that I did not dispute the fact that the committee itself is in unison for a very long time, Chair, in terms of holding the executive to account. And in terms of the oversights of the claimed reports that we're receiving from municipalities in this committee. Thus, a need for us to be physical in terms of seeing value for money and all oversight committees across. But that's not my point. My point is that if you are saying that there is a diverse submission of different, I agree that there's the diverse submissions here. But we have not been given details into how they are going to resolve that situation within that period they are proposing in the committee, not to me, not to the EFF, but in the committee. We have not received the details as to how they are going to ensure that all communications across all affected departments, affected national, provincial, I've said that, district and local municipalities, and all communities, how are they going to get to resolve that within that period? It's something that we have not heard in the committee. You see, but what we have heard is interest groups that came with their own interest in terms of how this thing should obtain, and of course it's a fact that we have asked them about transformation. It's on record here in my books here. I record everything. Today is the 22nd of February, 2022. We are dealing with internal committee deliberations on disaster management. So we are saying about what we are saying. We record everything. So let them give us the details of how they are going to get around that thing within the proposed period. And then we can support them. Because at the center of that, the committee needs to hold the executive to account and do oversight of the things. Because I said, section 8, 9, and 10 of the Act does not simplify or propose how the national state of disaster then must come to hold what the affected departments, because in terms of the response, you see, in terms of those that should respond urgently, because we're at the urgent state of disaster, where urgent decisions and urgent responses need to be done. Currently, I said, yes, we said last week, Chair, that school children are not able to go to school from January due to the interventions of farm owners and farm and departments. How are they going to work together? I was asking AgriSA here, how are they working together with the national command center in terms of ensuring that those roads are in good state for the children and transport to thrive there? No, I was not answered. But thank you very much,
Chair. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, I've not unmuted myself. I'm saying, I see Honorable Green's hand. I'm not sure if it is the old one.
Chairperson.
Yes.
It's not an old hand. I won't be repeating anything, save to emphasize in response to my colleague, the Honorable Feza. I think that the important questions raised about the timeline of the disaster management or the timeline of the national state of disaster and so forth can best be addressed once we have agreed as a committee that this act should be amended, and then we can look at things such as the timeline and some of the other points raised. An interesting issue is, he mentioned schools, which I think are very important, the closing of schools, which under this declaration of national disaster for too long, I believe that schools were closed unilaterally without Parliament and the public having any of a say of it. It was done under a regulation promulgated under the declaration of the national state of disaster. And I think that's exactly the type of powers of government that needs to be constrained. And whereas we might not be in full agreement now on all of the particulars of how to constrain that power and how to ensure accountability, this bill gives us the opportunity to do so. But we first have to agree that it is, in fact, desirable for this bill to serve for our consideration. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable members, in fact, what is troubling me now, it's only that I see these three hands. So that might keep on. I think the central question is, what do we want to do? We have listened to all the inputs from the department, from stakeholders, from everybody. So we are here now comparing the notes. We have been given a summary, by the way. And I thought then members would talk to that. And immediately from there, we are able to say, this is what we think should be our way forward on the a bill that has been presented. So I am not going to, because I'm waiting for hands, but I equally expect members to deliberate on the matter.
Honorable Chair.
Yes, Honorable Kronova.
If I may, Chair, thank you. I'm going to switch off my video because I haven't got a very strong signal where I am here at Parliament. So my apology for closing my video. Say, if I understand you correctly, you want to go over now to the committee to make a decision. May I, and I do think that it is appropriate at this stage to say something, and if you don't mind, do you allow me to just summarize as far as the bill is concerned before you going further? So I ask your permission whether I can continue.
Let me give you that opportunity, like I'm saying, I think it would help us to have a sense of, even you who proposed the bill, you must have been listening to all the input. Then out of that, then say something, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe I must start to just refresh the minds a bit. That was when the Honourable Faith Matutumbi was the chairperson. We started with this process. And can I just say to the Honourable Members, you will remember, yes, it's a private member's bill. But then when the decision was taken to ask for public comments on the bill, it was actually said that the committee now take possession of the bill. So we must first see that this is an opportunity where there is an amendment bill on the table. And I think it has been said by some of the honorable members here. And it is actually a bill for the committee now. Now, let me stress again, honorable chair, it has never been the purpose of this bill to say that we want to take powers away from the honorable minister to declare, for instance, a state of disaster. The parliament or the committee or any other institution cannot declare a state of disaster. It's only the minister. So those powers are untapped. It is for the minister or whoever is in a position, whether it's on provincial or local government level, for that specific member to make that decision. And Chairperson, the whole issue, the central issue of this bill is about accountability and oversight. And yes, I know that we received some proposals when there's a comparison between, for instance, the disaster management bill and the state of emergency bill. I think we must just keep in mind, Honorable Chair, that if we compare the two, I did submit a research paper right at the beginning, and it is quite interesting to remember that in the world, about 80 countries, they didn't use a disaster management bill. In fact, they don't have a disaster bill or act, let me put it that way. They all have declared a state of emergency. Now, I think South Africa is in a certain sense in a unique situation where you have a Disaster Management Act and the State of Emergency Act. There is an overlapping. If you go and look at the state of emergency, it also provides for a natural disaster. But Chairperson, if we look what happened in practice, let me remind the honorable members that, you know, at one stage, the Honourable President employed 75,000 members of the South African National Defence Force. Now, 75,000 members is actually the total members of the South African National Defence Force. So we had a state of a disaster, although in practice we had exactly the same situation where we actually had a state of emergency. And I don't want to go in the arguments of human rights and all that sort of things. I think there were deliberations on that. The fact of the matter is that the state of Disaster Management Act created the situation where you could just as well use the emergency, State of Emergency Act. And therefore, Chair, there was an outcry, and I say an outcry from all people in South Africa, all walks of life, to say, but there should be more accountability and oversight from Parliament. And I've listened to what the Honourable Member of the EFF said, and I support him when he said that they do believe in oversight and accountability. And that's why, and I understand that also from his leader. I am not aware of the fact that the EFF ever said that they are against oversight and accountability. In the contrary, is the way I understand that is exactly what they want. So when the members make decisions on the desirability, they must ask themselves, are we in favor of more accountability, more oversight from Parliament? And I think an objectively decision should be, of course we want. And let me remind the honorable members of this committee as well, that, you know, with the Zonda Commission, the previous speaker, the honorable Thandi Modise, when she went to the Zonda Commission, she apologized to the people of South Africa for the lack of oversight from Parliament and the accountability from Parliament towards the executive when it came to state capture. So that is the most important thing. And Chairperson, this is an opportunity. And like the EFF said, yes, there are many issues. I refer, like the Honorable Brink has referred to the schooling. This is an opportunity. And all the other issues, besides the political issues with different views, I think that each and every political party will have an opportunity that if they accept the desirable or desirability of this bill, that they can work further on all those issues. That in the end, Honorable Chair, and that is the most important thing, is to say to the people of South Africa, our constituents, that yes, we as your representatives, we want to have more say in, for instance, the make and the acceptance of certain regulations. And I don't want to go into that because it may sound like politics, but it is not politics. But allow me to use one example, like, for instance, the regulations that at one stage determined that people were not allowed to wear open-toe shoes. Now, Chair, I don't want to go into that, but that is an example where Parliament can play the role. To say, no, but this regulation is not suitable. There's no scientific proof to have such a regulation. And that is where, for instance, each and every political party's member can have his or her say to say, no, no, this is not acceptable. Yes, this regulation is necessary and it is accepted. It's the same with the duration. Chairperson, we are more than 2 years in a state of disaster now. And Parliament, and I think that in itself is proof that Parliament has no powers on it. Everybody, I can't think of any member of Parliament, I'm a member of Parliament myself, are confronted almost daily by the public or constituents to say, but what are you doing about the fact that we're still in a state of disaster? I'm sure each and every member of this committee has been confronted by that. And they say, but you're a member of Parliament. What are you doing? But if we want to be honest here, we must admit that at this stage, we have no powers. Because we don't have any powers as members of Parliament, the institution that represents the people, to say, listen, Minister, please come and explain to us. And she explained, but if we disagree with that, if all the members in the committee disagree with the minister turns around and says, I heard what you said, but now you do as I say. We don't have the power at this moment, as in the way the present act is determining that the minister and the minister only, and yes, I know it's with cabinet and everybody, has the power to end the state of disaster. Therefore, Honorable Chair, I'm going to conclude. My appeal is to the honorable members that we must ask ourselves, what is our answer to our constituents in terms of what we as members of parliament are doing, for instance, as far as the state of disaster is still effective, and why can we not intervene with that? Now, Chairperson, the 21 days and all those other details, of course, it can be changed. It was used because of a similarity between the state of emergency and the state of disaster. That was a comparison. So my final appeal, Honourable Chair, is, and I think all political parties, I can't imagine myself that there's a single political party, although we may have different political views on certain issues, but I can't see that any political party can go out and say to the people of South Africa, we don't believe that Parliament should have oversight and accountability over a situation like a national disaster. Therefore, Chairperson, I ask on your objectivity and responsibility towards the electorate of South Africa. Thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Groenewald. Well, we appreciate your clarity, but as expected, you were correct to say I'm trying now to probe members to say as we deliberate, we must have a way forward in terms of this. And I think it was clarified that once we are able to say this is desirable, then we'll be able to say what do we do. If we say it is not, as Honourable Brink tried to break down, but I'm saying we have a summary of the submissions before all of us, so we should not struggle to say whether this is desirable or not, and then get guided as to what do we do. If it is not desirable, or if it is desirable, then what would be the next step? So I'm trying to push members to raise their hands. I see Zoom user one, and Honourable Brink, number two. Can I get to you? And then Honourable Direko, number three. Honourable Teza, number four. That first hand of Zoom user, can you come up? In fact, it's reflecting like that. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I'm so sorry, Mr. Chairperson. I can't change my name as Dr. Pediachi from National Cocktail. So I'm called, it's written Zoom user, but I don't know how to change it on this computer.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You can carry on. Or were you trying to change? Okay. If then you are just trying to change, it's fine. Honourable Brink.
Thank you, Chairperson. When I spoke at the outset of the meeting, I did refer to the very useful and comprehensive summary provided by the researcher to the committee under the heading Updated Summary of Submissions on the Draft Disaster Management Amendment Bill, which I think is important for all of us to apply our minds to. And as I mentioned, on my count, about 11 of the 15 organizations and 3 of the 5 individuals expressed reserved or qualified, not reserved, qualified support for a bill of this nature that would impose greater accountability and oversight and give Parliament and the public a role in decisions in respect of when to end a national state of disaster, as well as the contents of regulations. I think then it's very important for us also to consider the submissions by the Department of Cooperative Governance and the Minister as to the desirability of amending the bill, Chairperson. And I think it's important to say at this point that in the main, it seems that those objections were that we can't take the competence of disaster management away from the executive and give it to Parliament. That would create an inefficiency in responding to disasters. There was also the argument that giving Parliament a role in the decisions about the extension of a national state of disaster, as well as the content of regulations, would cause undue delays. And what happens, for example, and this point was hammered over and over, if Parliament is in recess? Now, Chairperson, without going into each and every merit of what the bill proposes, I think it's fairly easy to respond to these objections by saying that quite clearly, the bill does not aim to take away the competence of disaster management from the executive. It merely seeks to give Parliament a greater role in what happens under the national declaration of a state or national disaster and the decisions that government can then take. And we can debate whether, as I mentioned earlier, the declaration should be 21 days or a few months. We can debate whether a special or a simple majority should be required for the extension of a national state of disaster. Those are all things that can make it easier potentially for government or the national executive to make effective and quick decisions. The Chairperson, is also important to note that in the absence of proper accountability, bad and inefficient decisions are also made. Unscientific decisions are also made. If decision makers are not required to account to members of Parliament and members of the public as to the reasons upfront why a particular decision has to be made, then the onus is on members of the public and interested organizations to run to court, to spend a whole lot of money, to cause a whole lot of disruption that could have been avoided had proper reasoning, proper evidence been applied at the outset so that we didn't have to ban alcohol or open-toed shoes or rotisserie chicken or whatever other, quite frankly, ridiculous and economically ruinous decision was made. Not because the people who were making them were bad people, but because they did not have the benefit of knowing at the outset that they would have to account in public about the nature of their decisions and that those decisions would need a parliamentary approval. And of course, if Parliament were in recess and such a state of disaster had to be declared, well, my goodness, it is the easiest thing in the world to recall Parliament, especially now with the benefit of this digital platform, Chairperson. Parliament can be recalled with a drop of a hat. So I think it's important that those submissions by the department also be properly scrutinized and we don't just look at these submissions. And Chairperson, my conclusion is the following, that indeed there is a need for Parliament to have greater powers in decisions made about a national state of disaster. In particular, I am less concerned about provincial and district or local states of disaster. The biggest threat to the for the abuse of power, and I want to stress this point, this exists beyond COVID. No matter who the minister is, no matter who the government is, no matter who the governing party is, there is a risk beyond COVID to the abuse of power of these wide-ranging regulations, and it is essential that, as is currently the situation with a state of emergency, which is comparable to a national state of disaster. I think we've established that. It's comparable, not exactly the same, but certainly very, very similar in the extent of the powers it grants to the national executive. There should be procedural constraints, and we as representatives of the people of South Africa who account to the public, who have to explain to people what we're doing, how the decisions of government can be changed so that people can use their freedom and their opportunities. We must be able to apply our minds in a formal way, not just coming here for one or two committee meetings where, you know, the minister might attend or she might not attend. Formal procedural constraints in the hands of Parliament are very, very necessary beyond COVID to preventing an abuse of power, which leads to misery and poverty and damages society. And therefore, Chairperson, I, on behalf of the Democratic Alliance, I think there is the desirability, certainly, for such a piece of legislation. Let us then, I propose, accept it as such that there's a desirability for legislation of this nature. And let us then go clause by clause once that decision is made and see whether the provisions that are being put on the table is correct. But we have to apply our mind. We can't just simply default to a position, say, oh, no, but we're not. We have to apply our minds. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Direko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it is fundamentally important that the National Assembly maintain oversight over the declaration and the extension of the state of the disaster. And, Chair, what is also raised as a main concern is an issue of oversight, of which I believe that NA already has all the tools necessary to ensure that there's a proper oversight. So it does not require any amendment of the Disaster Act to do so. And, Chair, I believe that as I make my recommendation on this matter, I believe that the current COVID-19 regime under the Disaster Management Act has been implemented exceptionally well by the minister together with the support of the National Command Center. So there is no need for over-regulation of disaster management process, as this will yield undesirable result. So I think as part of measuring our work during this COVID, as part of continuous learning and improvement, Parliament will have to work closely with the executive in order to identify whether, out of the COVID-19 response, are there any important lessons taken forward through the amendment of the Disaster Management Act 2002 as it stands. And, Chair, I believe that one of the issues that have been raised more and more is the issue of oversight. Of which I believe all the necessary committees, all the relevant committees within Parliament will need to strengthen that side of ensuring that there's a proper oversight that will ensure that everything and every decision that are taken on behalf of our citizens of South Africa are at the interest of our people. So I believe we have necessary tools in place. We just need to strengthen ourselves to ensure that there's a proper oversight that will yield positive results. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaza.
No, Chair, thank you very much. I think that we've said a mouthful here and, in terms of our position on this. And most of the things that we said were pertaining to mimicking the same issues that are in place. And I reiterate that I still not finding joy in really getting as to what is it in their plans for the proposed amendments that will culminate into a proper plan that will be brought forward in the committee. That will say that in 21 days, this is how we're going to be dealing with this. This is how we're going to deal with emergency preparedness. This is how we're going to be reducing risk of disasters, mitigating the severity of disasters. This is how we are going to contain the virus. This is how we're going to ensure that departments are responsive. Responsive to the damage caused by disasters. I think that we are in unison in terms of that. That oversight that that needs to be strengthened. And in some instances here, it is written and supported that it should do so. But we are not going to willy-nilly, as my colleague said, support something that is not bringing forward an alternative solution to the current amendments, and clarify a position in terms of what then are the origins of the proposed amendments. We are going to apply our minds in such a way and not accept things for the sake of them being fundamentally correct, but not find and research as to whether they are in place in terms of legislation or whether they are strengthened or not strengthened. So we're not going to do that. For instance, the monthly extensions after 21 days, that I would like to get around as to what then happens when all these councils are in recess and the lapsing of a state of disaster and the bylaws that are obtained within that period. That the requisite majorities in councils must be a desirable rather than the proposed simple majorities, because I'm of the view that we can further be stuck there trying to vote. We know how do we vote in parliament. There's a lot of this and that, give and take, and all kind of nonsense that's happening within that. And then we can end up holding the disaster management process at Ranzo to say that let us continue to be engulfed with that particular situation and hopefully end up with an undesirable situation. But I do consider the communities themselves suppose that through the WhatsApp groups, that is said to be a community. That 500 of people that are ambiguous there will simply say they don't understand these amendments and they don't support them. And anything that is not clear from the public points of view cannot be clear with us as committee members. So in that, Chair and other honorable members that have spoken before, I do not think it's desirable. Thank you.
Thank you. I think what we need to do now, the minister is not here. I'm sure the leader of the team from the department has been listening to some of the, whilst they are not the ones who are going to decide, I don't want us to interpret for ourselves, especially on the issue of oversight and accountability, without them saying something. Equally, the researcher who gave us a summary of everything, let's not rely on Honorable Brink alone when this researcher is in this, so that we can be able to answer this question. It will be answered by members correctly. We don't want just to answer this thing of desirability. Can I invite Dr. Tau to say something, especially in helping us to clarify ourselves as we want to move forward on the matter?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and everyone in the meeting. Thank you for the opportunity. I have listened intently when contributions were made, and we basically would just be reaffirming what our minister has already expressed. And as a starting point, I just want to clarify a statement that I had been mentioned. I think it was Honorable Groenewald, regarding the minister's role or authority in deciding on regulations. I want to clarify this by quoting Section 26, which our minister articulated last week, to show that it is not the minister alone that decides on regulations. But the Act in Section 26, subsection 1, clearly states that the national executive is primarily responsible for the coordination and management of national disasters, irrespective of whether a national state of disaster has been declared in terms of Section 27. I hope if we can understand that, we'll realize that any decision that is made was made in respect of regulations was a collective decision based on a reasonableness, rationality, and also following procedural fairness. The other matter I want to just clarify, Honorable Chair, I said in the previous meeting that this piece of legislation is regarded as one of the most progressive pieces of legislation world over in managing disaster risks. And in fact, some of the countries, to be specific, India, used this as a model to develop their own piece of legislation. The reason for that is that our piece of legislation is development focused, and it puts emphasis on risk reduction, which is characterized by preparedness, prevention, and mitigation. And I think if we are to have a thoroughgoing discussion about the Act, where we must start is the extent to which we are reinforcing the prevention, preparedness, and mitigation perspective of the piece of legislation. The response and recovery aspects are very important because it's about now saving lives, livelihoods, and protecting property. But all what we spend most of our time on, led by our minister and the national executive, is to ensure that we enhance prevention, preparedness, and mitigation. And that must happen through all development decisions that we made on a daily basis. The extent to which we comply with bylaws, the extent to which in the farming communities, we make sure that we comply with best farming practices so that we are not hit by drought and other incidents. So just coming to the specifics regarding the amendments. At this stage, while we appreciate what Honorable Brink mentioned about desirability, and we want to emphasize the fact that desirability has to always be balanced with adequacy, rationality, and reasonableness. Why we are saying this is that while it might be desirable, and Honorable Kaisa and Honorable Direko clearly articulated the facts, while it might be reasonable, it might be desirable, but adequacy of this amendment, it's something that has not reached the standard that it needs to reach, implying that we need to do a thoroughgoing, just like any piece of legislation, thoroughgoing analysis of the piece of legislation to check how is it still effective to ensuring prevention, preparedness, mitigation, and response. Because if we just look at one element, we might end up losing the whole picture of the focus of the piece of legislation, and its implementation might be compromised. So we would like to still submit that let the department, our minister, be allowed the opportunity to consult with all role players, as the act is not only meant for implementation by our minister, but it must be complied with. You had Honorable Kaisa quoting Section 8, Section 9, Section 10. And if you read that section with Section 25 about disaster management planning by sector departments, Section 38 by disaster management planning by provincial entities, and Section 39 planning by organs of state in the provinces, meaning departments, and Section 52 about municipal organs, and 53 about municipalities, you will realize how multidisciplinary, multisectoral, and vertically and horizontally the function has to be integrated in order to be fully achieved. So I therefore want to submit that we be given the opportunity under the leadership of our minister to submit a comprehensive analysis, which is something that has already been done under the leadership of our minister, in terms of which are the areas that might have to be amended to improve the implementation of this piece of legislation. I mean, you can see a clear example, as I conclude, Honorable Chair, that with the recent flooding incidents, we saw many people being trapped in floodline areas. And this is the cry that we make on a daily basis to say, let people not be allowed to settle in areas that will compromise their properties, their livelihoods, and even their lives. And it's a disaster risk reduction issue that falls within municipalities to make sure that bylaws are implemented. So if we can have the Disaster Management Act enforceable through bylaws of municipalities, I think we'll go a long way. We have seen countries like Gambia and them who have been able to implement what we call corrective risk reduction to deal with vulnerabilities that communities continue to face. So that is how I would like to conclude, and therefore just reiterate the position as expressed by our minister that the draft amendment bill is not supported. And as Honorable Jerego indicated, we will appreciate strengthened oversight where it is necessary, but we'll work hard to ensure that we present a comprehensive analysis and proposal on possible areas for amendment. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I have colleagues here, and Dr. Patiache is also here. I noted earlier they may also wish to contribute with your permission, Chair. Thank you very much.
If there's anyone, you can go ahead. So one of them is prepared. We just want to empower members in terms of whatever information that you might have. But if there's nobody wants to say anything, I can see members, their hands are up. But we want to yes?
Sorry, Chair, just briefly.
You know, I went on to read something, Chair, because I always read these things. I might not.
But Honorable Kaza, I thought you are one of those people who are from the department. So let's hear them first before we can. I'll come back to all the members. If there's anybody, then if there's nobody from the department, our researcher, anything you want to say before I come back to members?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members of the committee as well as the guests attending the meeting. Chair, I want to agree with Honorable Brink that the majority of the submissions that have been received actually express a need for a bill like this. So if you look also at the submissions, the 500 plus submissions received via WhatsApp, you find that when you read them, people are actually referring to the adjusted lockdown alert levels. So that's what they are not supporting. So they are not actually referring to the bill itself. So yes, other than that, I have no other addition to make. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Well, then I come back to you, Honorable Members. I think as you speak now, you must also help us to, after listening to each other and listening to the department and the researcher, we are almost on the way forward. Now, Honorable Kaza.
Okay, Chair. Before we are on the way forward, there's legislation on the role of Parliament in relation to oversight and accountability as mandated by the Constitution. It says that defining oversight, it talks about it having a Westminster view and inherited by many former British colonies. And then it says, in South African context, oversight is a constitutional mandated function of legislative organs of the state to scrutinize and oversee executive action and any organ of the state. And then it will go on 2.1, functions of oversight to detect and prevent abuse, arbitrary behavior, and illegal and unconstitutional conduct on the part of the government and public agencies. At the core of this function is the protection of rights and liberties of citizens. Correctly so, to hold the government to account in respect of how a taxpayer's money is used. It detects waste within the machinery of government and agencies. And my point is that to ensure that policies announced by government and authorized by parliament are actually delivered, this function includes monitoring the achievement of goals set by legislation and government's own programs to improve transparency of government operations and enhance public trust in government, which is in itself a condition of effective policy delivery. Then it says, it talks about defining accountability, then talks about functions of accountability. So I'm saying that because of the available legislation, Chair, we might tread very carefully in terms of whether the availability of strengthening this available legislation does give effect to citizenry and build up the trust. But Chair, as I conclude, we are saying that we cannot at will accept the position that 60% of simple majority, this and that, that is proposed without proper interrogation and application of our minds. I would like a situation where I sit together with my senior Komsa, Honorable Mkhalipi, to discuss the available legislations and the submissions that have been given by the department, you know, against the proposed legislation. Because, Chair, to just say this is what we desire or not desire without having satisfying views as to what is entailed into the details, because you must analyze the conditions that inform the proposals and by who, by the way, in society, and when and how does it seek to remedy the situation, and how does it seek to strengthen this and I think, Chair, we were of the view that much needs to be done in terms of convincing us towards ensuring that we understand the proposed amendments. Right now, we are not in one accord in terms of that. I said that as my colleague pointed to 15 organizations, 11 of which come from the 15 are in full support of the idea. 5 individuals were expert on law, 3 of them. If we were to go by that and just conclude that that's the support of the amended of the proposed amendments, then I don't think we would have made justice in terms of the solution that should be brought within the proposed amendments themselves. What is the solution, and how are we going to put so that we know ourselves what better plan is in place? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Direko.
Thank you, Chair. It was an old hand. However, Chair, sure. I think I'm covered by the previous speakers, especially Dr. Tau and Honorable Kaza on other aspects regarding the oversight. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Brink.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to repeat myself, but I do want to say that it is significant that the majority of the submissions that we formally received do show that there is public support for the motion of desirability, and I think we must consider that. But I have given my position and the position of the Democratic Alliance in favor of that motion of desirability already. Thanks very much.
Okay. I'm not sure if Dr. Groenewald would want to say something.
Thank you, Chair, if you give me the opportunity. I will be very short, Chairperson, and may I respond to what Dr. Tau has said. It is understandable. He's a civil servant, and he must follow the lead of the minister. And I said at one stage, I understand it's not the minister as individual. I do understand the act. It is a collective decision. But I think, and it may sound very strange, that what the honorable member from the EFF said is exactly what is in the constitution. There's a constitutional obligation on parliament to ensure that there is accountability and oversight, which we don't have at this moment. And that is the essence of the whole bill. And I want to reiterate, this is a starting point. If the desirability is accepted, yes, it is desirable, then the department, then Dr. Tao and his team and everybody, all the role players can give their inputs. But I can assure you, Honorable Chair, if we do not accept the desirability, what was actually said by Dr. Tao is wait. The department will come forward with an amendment bill. Let's put politics aside here. And I said it in the beginning. I didn't start this process to score political points. It is because we are confronted by the electorate about accountability. Forget politics now. Think rationally. Think objectively as a member of parliament. We are all members of parliament. Do we fulfill our constitutional obligation as read by the honorable member from the EFF? No. And it doesn't matter what the department says or what Dr. Tao says about adequacy. Yes, of course. And of course, if we don't need a 60% majority, but a simple majority, it's for the committee to make those decisions. But at least if we accept the desirability, it can start functioning. And I want to make a prediction, Honorable Chair, that if we have to wait for the department, next year, this time, we will still don't have any proposed amendment bill. Because if it takes so long just to ensure that certain departments are in place when it comes to regulations, how long is it going to take for an amendment bill coming from the department? So, in short, I want to say again, if the honorable members make a decision, make it a decision not from a party political point of view, but as a member of parliament, do you fulfill your, can I say, constitutional obligation as a representative of the electorate? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Well, as chairperson, listening to all the different inputs and what was expected of us to indicate the desirability or not of this. And now listening to, I think generally all of us, we agree, we have got a responsibility to conduct oversight over the executive. And I think even the executive, it's a constitutional obligation on our part as parliament. Now, I think the bill itself is beginning to say there are gaps in terms of that. And if I listened well to what Dr. Tao was saying, and I think the minister as well, I think that is where we need to get into, focus on what the Constitution gives us the responsibility to do, focus on this issue of oversight and accountability in instances of disaster, as it has happened, but not only guided by this COVID-19. I think because when we make a piece of legislation, it must talk to disasters of whatever nature. Now, Dr. Tao, so I'm coming to what I think we must consider. He's saying, yes, we want to reclaim, irrespective of these other small things that we are talking about, the days and whatever, the majority. The focus now is on oversight. He says, then if we direct the minister, as we would want to take this decision of desirability, to say, focus on this, give us feedback immediately on this issue of there's this piece of legislation, the current piece of legislation. We see gaps. Do you see the same gaps? And if we do, what is it that can be done immediately to improve on the bill that is before us so that we can pass through that? That is what Dr. Tau was saying. Well, he was not talking about a short period. As I was listening to him, you might be right, Dr. Groenewald. He was saying there's need for a thorough analysis of this, what we call gaps. And but I think we can convert that thorough to say, do something that would help us to decide. Why I am saying let's listen to what he's saying is because of what Mr. Tseza has just concluded in his remarks as well. To say yes, he's saying yes and no. He's saying yes to accountability, yes to oversight. The Constitution gives us that authority. Now, he can't, after listening, he can't conclusively say then, as a party, you are right to say, let's look at this as a committee. But he says he can't conclusively say, as a party, for now, he still stands by what he said earlier. But he can hear some of the things that members have said. So he would need more time. That's what I picked from him. So that's why I'm saying yes and no. If I take the no part of it, then that agrees with Honorable Direko. According to Honorable Direko, oversight, he says there's nothing that prevents us from doing oversight. It might be we need to focus on the legislation before us to say where is the gap. Then that agrees with what Dr. Tau was saying. And accountability as well. And then for Honorable Direko, he's saying, if we ask that question of desirability, for now, both of them, Tseza and Direko, are saying no, it is not necessary, but as I say, I need further consultation on the matter. And I would suggest for now that let's not push ourselves into a decision on the matter. I would say let's postpone the decision, but for a specific time frame, it must come before us soon, after we have allowed Honorable Tseza, Honorable Minister, let me not talk about the Dr. Tau, Honorable Minister, identify the question before us that we must decide on the desirability before we can effect the technical whatever other issues that we agree on. With that, let's say, because normally we must give time frames when we decide on issues, let's say we give ourselves Now, let me not put the time frame. Let me allow members to suggest. But I think the summary that I'm giving you must not remove this question that says desirability, a decision from the committee must be taken, allow space for whoever who wants to do further consultation. Any time frames?
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Grunewald.
Chairperson, next week we meet with HEPF in the morning from 9 to 12, and I think it will take the whole time. If we can then afterwards talk about the desirability of the bill, I think that will suit.
Okay, there's a proposal, Honorable Members. Do we agree? Any member to support that time frame? Honorable Brink?
Yeah, Chairperson, I do think it would be good if we can deal with it as soon as possible, having received this information. So I would support that.
Supported, assume, agreed to. Then this matter stands to the date suggested next week when we listen to that municipal pension fund immediately after that item. Then that should conclude the business for the day. And I think all of us, we must apply our minds to make sure that by that date we would be able to move forward in terms of what needs to be done. Dr. Dao, you must give feedback to your principal and I think that's that. If there's nothing, would I be wrong to say we have come to the end of the business for today? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Yes.
Honorable Drago. Hello. Honorable Drago. Honorable Whip. Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable.
I was having a problem of the network. I did write even in the group. Can you maybe repeat it to me? Because now I can hear I can hear you clearly. About what the honorable members who last speaking about, I hear what was saying, deity. After that, I lost.
You got lost. Okay.
I got lost, sir.
We are saying we are postponing the decision now today. We will not take a decision on the desirability of the bill.
Okay.
We are postponing it to next week on the day when we would be listening to the pension fund. It is on which day? Briefing by on the 2nd of March. It's postponed to the 2nd of March after that item. Where we are saying Honorable Pesa asked for more time to consult on this thing of desirability, and the representative of the department, who I said is representing the minister, also wanted more time to look at specifically the issue of oversight and accountability. On the issue of the Disaster Management Act as it stands. So we are saying all of us, let's go back, then come back on the 2nd to take a decision on the desirability of this amendment and this amendment bill, which is before us as a committee, that's what we agreed on. I'm not sure if you're still hearing me.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
The meeting is actually on the 1st of March because the SALGA conference is from 2 to 4 March. So the meeting with the...
It will be on the 1st municipal, of March.
Yes, yes, Chair.
Then let's communicate it properly, including this item now in terms of the decision of this meeting. I'm sure Honorable, was it Honorable Kaba? If she can't hear us, then you communicate with her. The meeting is urgent.
Record.